Step two, insult the entire institution that is currently giving voice to your inane musings as well as the people who enjoy it. Step three? Step four, profit. Andy's dad called me after that interview to give me some media relations tips, which, thank God. He literally wanted me to take a class, but I caught on pretty quick. The real trick is to know exactly the one point you absolutely 100% need to get across, and also know when to shut your mouth. My biggest problem was always the second bit. I always finished really strong and then would say, like I had more to say, but I really didn't. Listening back, I hate hearing that so much. It makes me want to smack my idiot face. Anyway, I did 5 or 6 of these chats, and by the 6th, I was pretty good. It was 4 consecutive days of waking up at 4 a.m. to get ready for an interview on Good Morning America or the like. Sometimes Maya would be there if she could get off work, and Andy always would. That was part of his dad's deal. It was exhausting and fascinating. It was also distracting and prevented any of us from giving the mysteries of Carl and Wikipedia the attention they deserved. Not that thinking about them more would have helped much. You can go back and watch a lot of these interviews on YouTube. No one comes out looking anything but dumb because of how completely wrong everyone was about everything. People argued with me that it wasn't about art, that it was, in fact, government spending gone awry. The most prevalent theory, which I couldn't really argue with, was that the Carls were a PR stunt for a new movie, or video game, or maybe the launch of a Lost Queen album. Seriously. It's so easy to forget being wrong. It turns out pundits don't want to talk about what's happened. They want to use what's happened to talk about the same things they talk about every day. Eventually, I realized that almost all of these people were talking on the news for free. And they weren't doing it because they wanted to change the world or because they wanted to do something interesting. They were doing it because it got their face and their name into the world. But I think I'm being honest when I say that I initially came at all of this fairly reluctantly. At first, I tried to maintain my pre-existing distance from the internet, but it didn't take long for it to get out of my control. Here's a story. I was sitting on my bed, the one in the living room, with Maya. We were both on our phones and watching some terrible but also amazing baking show on Netflix. At this point, I was still assuming that the attention and notoriety were all short-term, so I had left my email address up on my site. I checked my email and saw this. Your cruelty. Our interaction on Twitter today has left me so disillusioned. Judging by your TV interviews and YouTube videos, you seemed like a genuine person, maybe even a kind person. I now see how wrong I was. I should have known better. I just wanted to let you know that you suck. Mary. So I wrote back, because not only had I not been mean to Mary on Twitter that day, I also did not have a Twitter account. If this seems completely bizarre, I agree. It can be easy to stay inside your bubble in New York City. It is a world of its own. Instagram was the only platform that meshed well with my strengths, art, design, and being photogenic. I also liked to share photos of whatever I was reading, which was probably Louisa May Alcott, but might also have been a biography of a famous artist or something. How else is a girl gonna show the world that she can be irreverent and sophisticated at the same time? Anyway, Mary linked me to the Twitter conversation, and indeed, a person pretending to be me had been pretty fucking terrible to Mary. How do you get a tweet taken off Twitter? I asked Maya, who was slightly more social media savvy than me. I think you can report it. What's going on? Someone is pretending to be me. I can't figure out how to report them. She took my phone. Oh, hun, it's because you're not logged in. You have to log in. I don't have a Twitter, though. Well, I guess it's not too much of a surprise that people are impersonating you, then. Huh? People are going to be looking for you, to follow you, or to argue with you, or just to see what you're up to. And when they find that you aren't there, some small percentage of them are going to just make a fake account. And since there's no real one, you can't report impersonation. So why hasn't anyone else reported them? Because no one cares? I can report them. I don't know if it'll do anything. I think they take it more seriously if the person actually being impersonated does the reporting. What? I was a little taken aback. And I can't do that unless I sign up? Yeah. So in order to not have people pretend to be me, I have to be on Twitter? That's pretty much the size of it. This is not fair, I replied matter-of-factly. I keep wondering when you will notice that that's how everything is, she said with a smile. So I signed up for Twitter, and we linked to it from the YouTube channel, and I tweeted some things, and by the end of the day, I had 500 real human people waiting to hear my every word, as long as they only came a few dozen words at a time. My Instagram, on the other hand, had been blowing up all week. I had 10 times more followers than I had before. It was a weird mix of exciting and stressful. I freaked out a little bit and went through and deleted a bunch of stuff I was less than proud of. Everything that had a border had to go. I thought way more about every post, and I felt like I couldn't put anything up if it wasn't really high quality. Suddenly, my posts had gotten much better and required much more work. 7 days in, I had stopped calling in to tell work I wasn't going to make it, and instead, I just didn't go. Don't do this. It makes it way harder to get another job in the future if you quit by just not showing up, but that's what I did. It helped that by that time I had made tens of thousands of dollars, but that income stream was drying up. We weren't being paid for our appearances. We were being paid for the use of our video, which they had already paid for. They were happy to have us keep coming on shows, but they weren't going to pay us. And if they weren't going to pay us, then I had more important things to do. What eventually became known as the Freddie Mercury sequence remained a total mystery. I ran through the sequence on Wikipedia dozens of times. Each time, the edits produced the same three additional typos before it reset. A single note had appeared on the Wikipedia page commenting that a persistent typo wasn't allowing itself to be fixed, so at least one other person had noticed. As the days passed, the search for the artist slash marketing firm slash shadowy government agency responsible for the Carls got more intense. But knowing that there was more to it was leading me in different directions than the rest of the world. Googling IAMU certainly wasn't helping. It seemed unlikely that this had anything to do with the International Association of Maritime Universities or the Iowa Association of Municipal Utilities. It seemed most likely that it was a hint. Just far too vague a hint for us to figure out. What if we ask the internet? This was us again, on my living room bed. The sun had gone down while Maya and I had been engrossed in our various laptop-based activities, and we hadn't stopped long enough to turn any lights on. Life with no job was wonderful. I could see her mostly by the light of her screen. Huh? Maya replied, hammering away at her computer on some work email. Maya didn't seem to see Carl as a life-disrupting force so much as an event that would someday be a great anecdote to tell at a fancy cocktail party with a bunch of executives while wearing a cute outfit. She had always been as much into the business as the craft, which was extremely valuable and probably why she had the coolest job of any of us. IAMU. I could just tweet out the weird Wikipedia clue and let other people try to figure it out. As they say, 10,000 minds are better than three. I had been building my Twitter following with posts about Carl and politics. I had also developed a new and voracious interest in growing my number of Twitter followers, which had become a fun game. My brain liked seeing the numbers go up. I do not like this idea. She didn't even look up from her laptop. Why, because you'd rather I stop obsessing? I had been bugging her with a lot of dumb ideas, even though her one-word replies had given me the impression that she was just about done with all this hoopla. No, April, she turned to me, because it's weird. It's already weird and impossible, but this makes it more weird and impossible. Plus, what if the answer is something big? Do you want to give that up? I got the distinct feeling that she added that last part because she thought it would convince me, not because she thought it was a good argument. But someone else is going to find it, and they'll talk about it first. It makes sense that the world should know about it, and I want to be the one to tell them. Would you rather be the first person to reveal that there is a mystery or the person who solves the mystery? Maya continued to appeal to my newfound sense of self-importance to get me to do what she wanted. I noticed. Okay, I get it. I'm fully psychoanalyzed. I want to be both, but I have a 100% chance of being one of those things if I tweet about it right now. I tend to get obsessed with things when I'm first learning about them, which happened with Twitter and was starting to happen with YouTube, and even, to some extent, the news media. There was a part of me that just wanted to tweet about the Freddie Mercury sequence so I could have more opportunity to use and understand the platform and just see what happened. That's a terrible reason to tweet something, but a pretty common one. Okay, maybe we need more than 3 minds, but I don't think we should have 10,000 yet. Who else do we trust? I was somewhat upset to find that no one was coming to mind. We had our 3-person team, 2 people I trusted, and me. Adding anyone to the inner circle felt wrong in a way that adding 10,000 did not. My parents? My brother? Some of my friends from college? Some of my friends from high school? No one was popping out as a trained puzzle solver. Well, I said finally, there are a few people I've seen over and over again online who seem cool and interested and supportive. It's like they're starting a little community around my video. I stopped, not wanting to continue. They... what? She asked skeptically. They call themselves Carly's Angels. Maya's smirk turned into a chuckle, and then she just burst out laughing, and then I did too. The constant feeling that she would rather be talking about literally anything else finally washed away. I know, I continued. They seem to be almost all women for some reason, and the guys don't seem to mind the nickname. But Carly? Anything for a pun, I guess. She smirked. Can't argue with that. Do you feel like you know any of them? No, but I see a lot of the same names pop up over and over again. There's a Carly's Angels Twitter account that they all follow and that I have interacted with. I'm surprised none of them have stumbled across the Wikipedia thing yet. I could DM their account, I guess. Maya seemed concerned. Are they fans of you or of Carl? Both, I guess. It's weird to think that I have fans. They get really excited when I tweet at them. Yep, that's how Twitter works. Do I sound like a complete idiot when I talk about this stuff? I asked. It's just a little surprising how fast you've gone from 0 to 60. She did not seem enthusiastic. Because of how slow I was in figuring out other stuff? This was a not-so-subtle reference to the solid year of living together it took for us to hook up. I crawled over her laptop and kissed her. You are a little manipulative, you know that? Uh-huh, but you? Never. Let's make this decision later, she said. The next morning I had to get on a flight to L.A. for a late-night show that Mr. Scamped had booked us on. Even though we weren't getting paid anymore, he thought it would lead to other things and he wanted us to take some meetings in L.A. anyway. Maya couldn't just skip out on work, so we had some saying goodbye to do. I didn't get a lot of sleep that night. Not because I can go all night long or anything, but because our flight left at like 6 in the morning and that meant getting up at 4:30. This was awful because I'm terrible at sleeping on planes. At least that's what I thought. So Andy and I got on the plane and went to our seats. We weren't together and mine was almost all the way at the back. I got there and found someone else already in my seat and no open seats nearby. We did the comparing tickets dance, and it was 5:45 a.m., and everyone was awake and not asleep the whole time, and we all wanted to die. But our boarding passes said the exact same seat. I showed the flight attendant, who was more awake than I have maybe ever been in my life, and with the biggest smile ever, he informed me that I was now a first-class human. So they brought me back up to the front of the plane, and I plopped myself down next to a middle-aged, balding man, which is what first-class humans seem to mostly look like. I got a mimosa before we even took off, but the little TV built into the seat in front of me was broken and just showed a bunch of numbers and colors. I tweeted a picture of it. At April May Be Not. On my way to L.A. and got bumped to business class. My little plane TV is broken, though, so I want the money I didn't spend back. I was virtually a social media celebrity now, and so I had to let the entire world know every time I experienced any inconvenience. Shortly after liftoff, I discovered that I do not have a hard time sleeping on planes. I have a hard time sleeping in uncomfortable chairs. This chair turned into a literal bed. Business class was all dreams, baby. We landed just a few hours before the shoot, so we had to rush through the airport, which became impossible when a group of students came up to Andy and me, and every one of them wanted to get a separate photo. Andy's dad finally dragged us out of the knot of kids and toward the baggage claim. One of those guys in suits was standing at the base of the escalator with a sign. The sign read, Marshall Scamped, Andy's dad, which was a little disappointing. Still, I definitely snapped a picture of him to Maya, realizing I hadn't yet texted her in all the hubbub since we landed. The drive to the studio was overwhelmingly composed of Andy being extremely excited. He was just a lot more into this whole thing than I was. Okay, that's not entirely true. Andy was into the spectacle of it. He believed in entertainment culture in a way I never have. There's an appreciation that stretches beyond enjoying content and into worshiping all the bits that come together to make the content. I still saw it mostly as a necessary chore. I wasn't excited by any of it, but I was interested in what it could do for me. Our different outlooks started to cause some friction. Here's a scene from the green room of that late-night talk show. You know, you don't have to hate everything, April. Have you ever seen the way I look at cheesecake? You know what I mean, like, this is the only time in our lives anything this cool is ever going to happen, and you look mostly like you need to poop. Stop thinking about my poop. So many people would kill to be on TV. To get to do all the things you're doing, just look at it objectively. You're getting treated like a VIP and flown around the country, and we're basically famous, and you're determined to hate it. Andy, I paused to compose myself. I don't watch TV. I have never watched TV. I do not know anything about this man we are about to talk to. But more than that, I haven't slept more than 5 hours at a time since before Carl. I don't like planes. Luxuries make me uncomfortable, and my life is so upside down that I fucking forgot I was getting my period, so I had to ask a stranger for a tampon just now. They didn't have tampons in the bathroom? I didn't even think to check because I'm new at this! And like that, we were laughing again. I'm sorry, Andy, I just don't know what I'm doing. I feel like I'm being asked to be something I'm not. Why of all people are they asking me about this stuff? I'm barely anything. But I also like it sometimes. I like it that people think my opinion matters. It's just, I don't know if it does. Andy thought about this for a long time before he said, April, I think you're doing a good job. I looked him in the eyes and almost said something dumb and snarky, but then instead just said, thanks, Andy. This was the night it all changed for me. After that conversation, I realized something. I wasn't ever going to love the entertainment industry the way that Andy did, but he was right that it was an amazing opportunity, and my lack of interest gave me a kind of power. I honestly didn't know that there was a difference between being on cable news and being on network late night. To me, TV was TV. I had no idea that what I was about to do was a big deal. For all these reasons, the practice of the week before, my immunity to its power over me, and the pull of the power it offered, I suddenly became pretty good at television. Here's how things went that night. It's fun to be able to recount some of the conversations I had verbatim because of how there were like 12 cameras pointed at me while I had them. Everyone, April May and Andy Scamped, the discoverers of New York Carl. We walk out to applause. We had mostly been doing more newsy stuff, so this is a bit different. How's life been for the last week? I tended to do most of the talking, so I start out, pretty weird, Pat. Pretty freaking weird. My name is not Pat. Pat laughs. Honestly, I've just started calling all the news people Pat because I can't keep you all straight. Andy chimes in here. April is new to the institution of television. She spent her entire life being entertained by novels from the 1860s. Chuckles from the audience. Not true, my friend. I have spent a fair amount of my life being entertained by cheesecake. The callback to our previous conversation was intentional. There's some more robust chuckling from the audience. The host gets back in the game here. So the saga of New York Carl keeps getting weirder. Estimates are saying that if it's a marketing campaign, it had to have cost more than $100 million to pull off. Andy answers, yeah, setting off an EMP to knock out security cameras isn't just expensive, it's illegal. There are reports that the Carls in China have been closed to the public. Do you think there's anything for people to be worried about? When you're faced with something you don't understand, I think the most natural thing, but also the least interesting thing you can be is afraid, I say. And then I change the subject, because I'm bored and pretentious. Does anyone else think Carl is beautiful? You actually do pre-interviews with these people. They tell you the questions they're going to ask. They even sometimes pre-write jokes for you so you don't come off looking like a total doof. The hosts are great at improvising, but guests usually aren't, so they want you to keep to the script. If you look at the tape, you can actually see Andy's eyes get big when I ask that question. He's panicking. Pat doesn't bat an eye. Maybe when the light hits him just right? The audience laughs. I just mean, even if it was done for marketing, they are remarkable sculptures. It's easy to forget how much time goes into things like designing giant fighting robots for movies. It feels cookie-cutter, but thousands of person-hours go into their creation. We love them because they're beautiful, and they're beautiful because of hard work. Pat nods approvingly before changing the subject. Has life changed much for you two? Andy is so relieved to be back on script and says, Well, for me, it's very weird to be recognized on the street for this video that April and I just thought was a joke. It's not like we've got a nighttime talk show. Moore chuckles. For me, it's the money. The YouTube video has made like $5,000 already. Keep clicking on that link, you guys. I say directly to the camera. Andy is freaking again. You've made that much? Pat asks. Oh, yeah, I reply. Also, a bunch of networks ran our video before we gave them permission, so Andy's dad, who is a lawyer, basically got to extort the networks for a frankly embarrassing licensing fee. I paid off exactly 42% of my student loans this week. And then I wink at the camera. We went on to talk, of course, about the mystery on everyone's mind. Pat joked that maybe Carl was sent by space aliens. And because I knew about the Wikipedia sequence and no one else did, I got to confidently say that I knew there was more to the story. But of course I didn't tell anyone what the more was. I looked cocky, but people either love that or they love to hate it. And in the attention game, which I was playing even if I didn't know I was, those things are equally good. So here's a really stupid thing about the world. The trick to looking cool is not caring whether you look cool. So the moment you achieve perfect coolness is simultaneously the moment that you actually completely don't care. I didn't care about the gravitas of that TV show, and the freedom and security and confidence that came with that was a rush. It took me a while to realize that the feeling I was feeling was power. Some people found me precocious and entitled, but that didn't matter because those people would still watch, which was all the people doing the booking cared about. Other people thought I was refreshing and clever, and honestly, I liked it. I liked that I was good on camera, and that people were talking about me, and that I was getting more followers on Twitter, and that people were listening to me. Most power just looks like an easier-than-average life. It's so built in that people mostly don't realize how powerful they are. Like, the average middle-class person in the U.S. is one of the 3% richest people in the world. Thus, they're probably one of the most powerful people in the world. But to them, they feel completely average. Power only does all its business of empowering when it's perceived as a difference between the power of those nearby, and even more important, the power one previously had. And I'm not going to pretend that this weird new confidence combined with this weird new platform wasn't more than a little bit intoxicating and already getting addictive. They tell you that power corrupts. They never tell you how quickly. In the squishy, leather, new car-smelling back seat of the Escalade that was driving us to our hotel, I was obsessively checking Twitter and Facebook for Carl news, and Andy was not quite amused and not quite annoyed with me. Why can't you just do what they tell you to do? Because that's boring. You were right when you said a lot of people want to be in my shoes, so I might as well be doing something interesting. It's like... He was working it out in his head, and then he finally figured it out. It's like you don't have any respect for any of this. Andy, that's exactly it. I don't. I told you, I've never watched any of these shows. I watch almost exclusively 1990s comedies on Netflix. If Pauly Shore calls and asks me on his show, I will be suitably freaked out, but I just value these things differently than you. But can't you just see that everyone else is valuing it and respect it for that reason? No, Andy. I've honestly worked my whole life to not think that way. I think that's how a lot of people end up respecting bad things, actually. Not that I think that show we just taped was bad. I'm sure people love it and it makes them happy. I just don't know enough about it to care. I was starting to feel a little bad, but I also wasn't going to give up on the freedom and the power I'd felt. I don't know if I'm necessary. Why am I even here? He said quietly. I grabbed him by the face and he blushed slightly. Andy, don't be dumb. You're here because you're part of this. And also, you're here to make the videos. Huh? Like you were saying yesterday. He had been saying it yesterday. We have a YouTube channel with 50,000 subscribers. We should make more videos. We should be controlling this story. You want that? I think I do. But he didn't have to say all the reasons I had already given him for not wanting to make more videos. Don't start arguing my case back to me. You won. 100,000, he said. We doubled in the last 2 days. I leaned forward and said to the driver, can you take us to some place that sells cameras? That night we made and uploaded the second April and Andy video. It was about what our lives had been like after Carl. I made sure everyone knew that Andy was a partner in the channel. Every time we did a TV thing, there was some confusion because I had faked that he was a stranger on the street in the first video. I made some jokes about television sucking, but at least there was free food. I only made very peripheral mentions of Carl, and I certainly didn't mention the Freddie Mercury sequence. Carl wasn't going to be news forever, I figured. So if we were going to transfer this into something that would last longer than that, we'd have to start differentiating ourselves. I figured we could maybe turn it into a show about art and design. I could do all the talking, Andy could make the camera work and do the editing. We could even bring in Maya to help us write episodes and do illustration. It's weird to look back on how we imagined ourselves back then and feel equal parts, "Oh, we were so useless and adorable," and "I miss that life so much I would end every panda to get it back." Sometime while we were shooting that video, the show aired on the East Coast, and I got like 5,000 text messages. I didn't bother to respond to any of them, not even Maya's. I figured we'd talk soon enough. I was giddy with the attention, with lack of sleep, and with excitement about what Andy and I were doing. I had understood the magnitude of the lightning strike, and we were catching it. Or at least part of it. But maybe the most energizing thing was that we didn't have anything to do the next morning. Andy's dad wanted to get us into an agency to talk about whatever agencies do, but that wasn't until like 3 in the afternoon. We were going to get to sleep really, truly, wonderfully, covered in drool, all by yourself in a king-sized bed, sleep. I didn't even bother to stay up and watch the West Coast airing with Andy. I shuffled to my hotel room to take off my goddamn shoes and my goddamn bra and my goddamn pants and drown myself in fancy high thread count hotel sheets. Chapter 5. Of course it didn't work out that way. I looked at my phone, and instead of texting some of the many people who had texted me, I went through Twitter and saw all the things, good and bad, that people were saying about me. And then I opened my inbox, like an idiot. I read and answered an email from Maya, and one from my brother, who was proud of me and so excited to see me at his wedding, and one from my parents, who really hoped I was taking care of myself. Then I remembered that email I'd sent to the woman at UC Berkeley. I checked to see if she'd replied. She had, actually, like 12 days ago. I hadn't seen it. Her reply had been buried by everything else, and I'd totally forgotten about our conversation. This turned out to be extremely fortuitous, because it allowed me nearly 2 full weeks of blissful freedom from crushing anxiety. I almost went to sleep one last time like that. One more night of normal. Well, not normal, of course, but not this. I've pasted it here completely unchanged, though I did fix some typos because Miranda would have a total meltdown if I didn't. You said it was warm? April. The properties you describe, hard, resonant, shiny, heavy, extremely low thermal conductivity, do not sound peculiar. They sound impossible. There are no known materials that have these properties. It is difficult to imagine a material that could have these properties. I managed to access the Carl in Oakland and did my own inspection. His thermal properties make no sense. He's showing 0% thermal conductivity. Nothing. All energy that hits him just bounces right back. It's basically impossible, so it must just be that my instruments aren't sensitive enough. I was also in line with a bunch of tourists getting selfies, so I couldn't stay too long without attracting a lot of attention. My research is mostly non-standard semiconductors, so this is a little outside of my expertise, but I've asked around and no one I talk to thinks this is possible. How energy moves around is what we do in this lab, and we have studied a lot of materials. He's like an aerogel, but more dense than uranium. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, we're left with three possibilities. One, I have forgotten something very basic about a topic I know a great deal about, and so has everyone else I've talked to about this, including people who are smarter and know more than me. Two, someone has constructed a new material that behaves unlike anything that currently exists or should be able to exist, and then put it on the sidewalk for everyone to see. Three, Carl is alien. And I don't mean alien like weird. I don't know if you've ever heard of Occam's razor, but basically, it's a principle that the simplest solution tends to be the correct one. It's BS. If there's an objective measure of simplicity outside of, like, entropic ones, I haven't seen it. Every person will have a different opinion regarding which explanation is simplest. So when I say that the external origin hypothesis is the simple one, that's informed by my bias. But I also recognize that it's the least likely just because so far there have been a lot of things that have happened and external origin has never been the reason. So, like, external origin has a 0% success rate at explaining stuff, which means it is unlikely. But I do not have a simpler explanation. I am not the only person who will have understood this, but I have also not heard anyone credible saying external origin. To be fair, I have also not been saying it because, well, it sounds ridiculous and is unlikely. In any case, I think we can rule out the art installation angle, since even if it were possible, which it isn't, producing 64 10-foot-tall robots out of a completely novel material like this would cost, at minimum, billions of dollars. Look, I don't know you, but I feel like I have a responsibility here since I'm potentially breaking this news to you. There is a very real chance that you made first contact. In case you aren't a nerd, I'm saying that you were the first human to discover extraterrestrial technology. Possibly extraterrestrial life. So, congratulations? I'm weirdly honored to have your email address. You should change your email address. You should do a lot of things. This is not something that can unhappen to you. I'm willing to say that there's a 90% chance that I'm wrong and that your life will be normal in a few weeks. But a 10% chance at being the first to meet an ambassador from another world is a pretty big deal. So, maybe do a little prep work. I'm C.A. Miranda on Skype if you want to chat. Miranda. I immediately started writing a response. But after half a sentence, I opened up Skype to see if she was online. She was. Seconds after I requested her as a contact, a call from her came through. I answered, and her face popped up on my screen. She was at a desk in what appeared to be an office. Bluish fluorescent light beat down on her wispy, uncontrolled red blonde hair. Huge brown eyes looked at me with excitement. April May? This is wonderful! Are you still at work? My brain was still on East Coast time, but it was after 10 on the West Coast. The lab, yeah, not really work. Tides and spectrometers wait for no one, you know. I live on campus, so it's barely worth going home. She was bright and seemed perfectly well-rested. Skype is never the most flattering, but she was, like, adorable. Way cuter than I would be interested in. Frankly, I've worked my whole life not to be adorable with only limited success, and two adorable people dating is way too cute for me. So I have to apologize. I only just got your email and, well, I had no idea what else to say. Indeed. I've gone back and forth about 600 times since I sent the message, but the longer they remain unexplained, the more obvious it seems. Obvious? Yeah. I think no one's saying it because everyone's thinking it. I mean, I was on a late night show tonight. It should be on here soon, and the host actually joked about Carl being from space. But, like, just because that's the simple solution doesn't mean it's the solution. Are you sure you're not being... I trailed off. I didn't want to insult her. I agree. I am there with you. Like I said in my email, explaining something by saying aliens has a 0% success rate. I just think that external origin, which is what I've been calling my hypothesis because it doesn't necessarily mean intelligent others, should be taken seriously because, like, I don't have any others. What do you mean, It doesn't necessarily mean intelligent others, I said, already feeling a couple of steps behind the conversation. Well, the only thing I know is that these things are really far outside of how stuff works. I don't want to say aliens because I don't know anything. But it doesn't seem possible that this was done by any man-made technology. And it certainly didn't happen naturally. Like, the Carls didn't grow from seeds. So the vaguest, most general thing I can say is external origin, meaning basically, this doesn't make sense. So you're not saying Carl is a space alien? No, but I am saying it looks increasingly likely that the Carls weren't made by humans or by nature. So you are saying Carl is a space alien? I started to freak out again. No, I don't know, April. It's exciting, but space aliens are a very specific explanation for a very broad circumstance. There's more to the universe than humans and aliens. Maybe they're made by humans but sent from the future. Maybe they are a kind of projection through space-time. Maybe they're proof that our universe is a simulation and someone is changing the code. Mostly, I don't pretend an explanation is correct just because I haven't thought of any others that fit with current data. She seemed very sure of herself, even if she looked a little timid and freaked out talking to me. Well, Miranda, speaking of the current data, we haven't told anyone about this, but there's more. Her eyes, impossibly, got bigger. I took her through the procedure of the Wikipedia clue. This is deeply impossible, she said after we had gone through the whole sequence. And nonsensical as well. I-A-M-U. I know, I've been racking my brain over this for days, so I don't expect you to- Elements, she interrupted. What? Elements. I-A-M-U. Those are all elements. Iodine, americium, uranium. Okay, that's another lead to add to the 50-mile-long list of guesses as to what this might mean. She looked a little dejected, and I felt bad for immediately dashing her first try at explaining it. I mean, of course Miranda would find a science-y explanation. She did science-y stuff. So I said, I mean, that's interesting, though. We hadn't thought of it. Her smile came back. So does this Wikipedia thing make your hypothesis more or less likely? Also, is there a time when we're going to know for sure? Her eyes shot around in thought for a moment before she said, The Wikipedia thing is weird, but less weird than the material thing. But maybe that's just because I don't really know that much about how the internet works. I'd have to talk to someone who knows things I don't know. But the material is not only unknown technology. According to my understanding of physics, it's not possible. And your second question is a great question. I don't know when we will know for sure. Maybe never. Sometimes there are mysteries that linger for centuries, so I don't know. I just can't fathom another explanation. We sat there and stared at each other for a long time before she got too uncomfortable and just said, So do you suggest operating under the assumption, privately at least, that Carl is external? It's hard to say, right? It is. Saying that felt weirdly like cursing in church. I wasn't quite in shock. I was more feeling like I must be an idiot for even listening to this. Miranda continued. Sometimes we have to do that. Sometimes we have to go with an imperfect theory and... She got quiet and her eyes unfocused and moved around the room. I stayed quiet because it seemed like if I said something, I would be interrupting something intimate and sacred. April, what if Carl's asking for something? Like, they want us to bring them things. None of those elements are abundant. Maybe they need something. I was, to be clear, completely clueless. For Miranda, things appeared to be crashing into place faster than I even got my mind around the fact that this might be a for real thing that Carl was doing. That Carl was alive. That Carl was external. I did my best to keep up. But, well, we're not going to be able to give Carl uranium. Why not? Well, it's uranium. Doc Brown tried to get some and the terrorist shot him. That was plutonium, and in any case, it's all a matter of quantity. Iodine is easy. We've got that in the lab. Uranium I don't have, but you can buy unrefined uranium or on Amazon. It's not dangerous unless it's purified. Americium, though, I don't know much about. It's transuranic, so radioactive and rare. I'll have to do some research. Quantities and purities are the hard part with rare stuff. She fired this all off at rapid speed, and as soon as she hit do some research, I could hear her typing while she talked. Oh, I've got a lead on americium, she said after a tiny pause. It's in most smoke detectors, so you can literally buy it at Walmart. Miranda, is it possible that Carl doesn't want uranium? I've already started to get questions from people who think that they're dangerous. Probably wouldn't be good for their image if they're searching for radioactive materials. I mean, I don't know. It was just a thought. I felt bad for throwing a wrench into her beautiful brain machine, though I did kind of want to slow the conversation. I mean, I wanted to encourage her. She was hard not to like, almost like a kid, a genius kid. It could be, I just thought maybe we should be a little surer before we start stockpiling uranium. Again, she was typing while I was talking. Oh God, she said, seeming scared. And that made me scared. It was the first time I thought maybe the Carls were indeed here to hurt us. Like she had discovered that mixing americium, iodine, and uranium would make a bomb that would destroy the Earth. Is everything okay? Shh. She shushed me. She shushed me like I was a 5-year-old who wanted a popsicle and she was on the phone with a very important client. She was clicking and typing and clicking and typing. I just sat there because, obviously, Miranda was hitting this problem way harder than I had the ability to. After a full minute of me being completely silent, she picked up exactly where we had left off. Ha! She shouted. I startled. Sorry, yes, oh my God, April, I'm so sorry I shushed you, oh God! She was turning red, and then she seemed to remember other things were going on. April, everything is fine, but Carl definitely meant elements when he said I am you, because everything on this Wikipedia page has reverted to normal except the original typo. And about... And here she started frantically scribbling in pen on her own hand. 9 numbers from the citations. 9 numbers are gone. She held up her hand, on which was scribbled 12724328. How did you figure that out so fast? I have a proxy IP set up so I can watch BBC shows. I was able to open the page from my IP and a British IP simultaneously. Comparing was easy once I noticed the numbers were missing. Okay, so what is it? It's not enough numbers for a phone number. Ha, no. They're the most common isotopes of those elements. Iodine, 127, americium, 243, and uranium, 238. Do you know what an isotope is? No, but maybe I don't need to? No, maybe not right at this moment. Suffice to say, Carl is asking for elements. And though there are more common elements out there, he's asking for the most common isotopes, which, if we're going to be his couriers, makes our job easier. Are you for real right now? In what ways? Did you just in 5 minutes solve a puzzle that has been devouring every ounce of my mental energy for the last 2 weeks? I can't believe I never looked at the citation numbers. No one ever looks at the citations. Don't worry, sometimes you just need a fresh pair of eyes. Yeah, a pair of eyes that have heard of americium. I didn't even know that americium was a thing. It was another few days before I saw it written down and realized it was an element named for America, since it is pronounced like americium. Eyes can't hear, April. So you're on TV tonight, right? That's exciting. Oh my God, no, it's not. She grinned. Yeah, I guess not. Hey, Miranda? Yeah? You want to go to Walmart with me? It was midnight. Our show was on TV, but now that seemed like the least interesting thing in the world. The mystery had eclipsed my obsession with strangers analyzing my performance. I had made a date to meet up with Miranda. She would drive down from San Francisco to meet me at Hollywood Carl after our fancy agent meeting. She was excited to meet Andy as well. I got into the big, silky, soft, cool hotel bed and turned off the lights and stared at the insides of my eyelids for about an hour before giving up. Miranda was right. I had had the thought before. When something is impossible to explain, you post the gif of the guy with the hair saying, "Aliens!" It's just what you do. I mean, don't stop me now? No video footage of them showing up? The fact that none of the Carls had been moved, though no one seemed to have tried super hard. The fact that no one, after almost 2 full weeks, had taken credit or spoken out about what must have been a massive logistical undertaking. I think a lot of people thought extraterrestrial. And of course, plenty of people were saying it on the internet. But no one wanted to be the weirdo advocating for the "it's aliens" theory on cable news. You can't say the word aliens without teasing your hair up and bugging your eyes out first. So the thought had been there, but it seemed like just a normal my brain is thinking stupid thoughts thought. But Miranda didn't seem stupid. She seemed really cool and smart and like she knew an awful lot about material resonance and thermal conductivity, things that sounded important and legitimate. She also was clear that maybe it wasn't aliens. It was just maybe not a bad idea to operate, at least privately, as if it were. I would probably have been more skeptical, but I remembered what it was like to touch Carl, and it did feel weird. Like nothing I'd ever touched before. Like when I got semi-electrocuted when my house got struck by lightning and I unplugged the TV while the wires were still all overjuiced. Not painful like that, just an entirely new sensation. The only other thought I had was that it was some kind of top-secret military thing. But why? What did any government have to gain from putting robots in a bunch of places all at once and then leaving an odd Wikipedia trail to three chemical elements? Just to say, hey, we can do this, scary, right? Don't mess with us. That made some sense, but then they would have taken credit, right? I could already feel my eyes bugging out. While I was unable to sleep in that glorious bed, I figured out the real reason I was freaking out. Not because we maybe weren't alone in the universe, or because my life was changing forever and I was going to need a new email address. It was because I needed to make a decision. The kind of choice that you only get to make once and you can't take back. And it makes your life totally different. And even if the path is clear, it's still deeply unsettling. Option one, the sane option. I could detach from all this as much as possible. Stop doing TV things, definitely do not meet a strange science girl at a Walmart in Southern California to buy smoke detectors, never do anything on the internet ever again, pay off my loans, buy a big house with a gate, with the licensing revenue that would, no doubt, if this were real, keep flowing for the entire rest of my life, and have dinner parties with clever people until I died. Option two, the not sane option. Keep doing TV, spice up my Twitter and my Instagram, and have opinions. Basically, use the platform that I was given by random chance to have a voice and maybe make a difference. What kind of difference? I had no idea. But I did know another chance like this wasn't going to come along ever. Given the laundry list of other potential culprits, it was difficult to realize that this was the thing that was freaking me out. But once I knew it, I figured the only thing to do was to make the decision, which would then maybe allow me to sleep in that mountain of pillows. With my brain full of fear and fog and excitement, and far too impressed with itself, I made my decision. As is often the case, it was the easier choice to make, and the more difficult choice to live with. Having made that choice, I immediately wanted someone to talk me out of it, so I called Maya. She didn't answer the phone. It's weird looking back on the little insignificant moments that completely change your life and maybe all of human history. There's one right there. Maya didn't answer her phone that night. It didn't go straight to voicemail, so her phone was on. She just didn't pick up. I texted her, "I need to talk about some stuff." And then, with one last look at that magnificent bed, I grabbed my laptop, walked out of my room and down the hall, and knocked on Andy's door. And then I knocked again. The third time, the door opened, and Andy stood there looking like I had just taken away the most beautiful thing in his life, which I pretty much had. "I have news," I said. "This is reminding me very specifically of another time you woke me up with news." "And that turned out okay, right?" "You may be convincing me right now that it didn't. Please, whatever is happening, can it please, please wait for 6 hours and 23 minutes? "Nope." I pushed past him, turned on all the lights, and walked into his hotel room, which, despite Andy having only been in it for a few hours, was a complete mess. "Whoa, was there a bomb in your bag?" "I couldn't find my toothbrush," he moaned. "Okay, I need to tell you a few things." We sat on his bed and I pulled out my phone and read him the email exchange with Miranda. He was very quiet after I finished before finally saying, "Carl is an alien?" "I know, I realize it sounds absurd, and look, it's probably not aliens. I mean, aliens! It's not a real thing that happens." "Yeah, well, there are obviously aliens. The only question is whether they have the technology and desire to visit." "There are obviously aliens?" I said, a little perplexed. Yeah, I mean, April, do you have any idea how many planets there are in the universe? Literally more than the number of snowflakes that have ever fallen on Earth. Or something. I don't know. It's a really impressive number. The point is that the odds that intelligent life happened just one time are basically zero. Oh, so this isn't such a big deal then, I ventured. Are you kidding? If this is real, it's the biggest deal in the history of big deals, he actually yelled at me. Whoa, okay, yes, okay, yes, yes. I almost said okay again, but I realized I was starting to sound like my brain had broken. So instead I said, I know this seems unlikely, but I have more news. You're right, it seems unlikely that any other news matters much right now. I Skyped with Miranda and told her about the Freddie Mercury sequence, and she figured it out. What? God damn it, April! Why are you mad at me? I don't know, I don't think I'm mad. I think I'm having a weird and unpleasant dream. Or if I'm not, then I'm just overwhelmed and tired. This is allowed to be overwhelming, right? Yes, absolutely. So do you want to know, though? I mean, yeah. But he didn't sound so sure. I walked him through Miranda's thoughts, her discovery in the citations, and that you can apparently buy uranium on Amazon. And then I said, which is all to say that if you thought we had a scoop before, we now have a very different opportunity, and I would like to suggest that we take it. What do you mean? I mean, if I made first contact with an alien life form, that's a bigger deal than me making a viral YouTube video, I said, using Miranda's term. And? And so people are going to talk about this for the rest of time. Maybe we can be a bigger part of the narrative. We? Yeah. We. April, if, and it's a big, huge Jupiter-sized if this is real, it's going to be way bigger than us. Every world leader is going to be on the news the moment it breaks. No one's going to listen to you. Exactly. I paused. Unless we work our asses off right now to be out in front of the story, and also unless we work out and implement the Freddie Mercury sequence before anyone else. Oh, do you think there are other people who know? They're already talking about it on the talk page of the article. If we get to it first, not only are we the discoverers of New York, Carl, and the initiators of first contact with an alien civilization, we're the ones who worked out the first system they're using to communicate with humans. April, are you sure this isn't a bad idea? No, in fact, I'm fairly sure that it is, but I have investigated the other possibility, which is leaving this alone and disengaging completely, and that doesn't sound like any fun at all. I can't believe I'm the one trying to talk you out of this. Me either! So stop! You know that maybe Carl isn't an alien, right? Yes, but we're going to act as if he is, make decisions as if he is. We're not going to talk about it or say it, and if it turns out he's not, we'll have invested in the wrong reality. But if he is, we'll be three steps ahead of everyone. Is that a good thing to be? Shouldn't, like, the president be three steps ahead and not a bunch of whatever we are's? I don't know, I said honestly. Let's just walk through the process and find out. And so we did what we'd been taught to do in school. We built a brand. Branding is something designers think about a lot. You take something like a perfume, or a car tire, or butt-flavored bubblegum, and you ask questions about it that you shouldn't be able to ask. What kind of tuxedo would this car tire wear to the prom? What is this perfume's favorite movie? You try to end up in a place where you understand a product as if it is a person. The reverse of this, where people become brands, should be easy, right? They're already people. End at the beginning. Except that really what you're doing when you brand is a process of simplification. You come to understand the essence of that fucking tire. And so branding a person also benefits dramatically from simplicity. People are complicated, but brands are simple. Marketing is a lot more about thinking than doing. We had to figure out what Carl's brand was, what my brand was, and how those identities would be a part of each other. We had to think realistically about the role I would play. I wasn't going to be the president. I wasn't going to be a national security or science expert. But how we defined me would be informed by how we imagined Carl. We decided that Carl represented power and the future and the other. I would represent humanity and weakness and the world before Carl. I would balance Carl. For all the this is huge and OMG freakouts, I could be a balance. Just a small, unassuming civilian who is handling this new reality fine. So you shouldn't worry too much either. That was an important role that I could fit into, that would be helpful, and that would give us power. We basically just followed the advertising campaign handbook all the way through. But this wasn't about designing a logo or picking fonts and a color scheme. In fact, we hardly did any of that. What we did have after a few hours of work was a plan and three different scripts. The first two were just there to round out the idea of April May, who she was, that she was smart, kind, and snarky, but open to the beauty and wonder of the world. We'd be able to upload them whenever there was time, but more important, they defined who we wanted me to be. In those videos, we put in little bits about Carl that would be hints to his possible origins, that the Chinese and Russian governments had closed down areas around the Carls rather than moving them, possibly because they were incapable of moving them, but they were mostly about me. Then we scripted the video we would release as soon as anyone caught on to the Freddie Mercury sequence. A video that would show us working out the sequence, going to the store to buy smoke detectors, and presenting Carl with the fruits of our labor. Then, of course, the script ended, because we had no idea what would happen next. People would later accuse me of being a careful and calculating marketer, using the situation as an opportunity to get rich and famous. I would deny it, saying it was just a bizarre thing that happened to me, but that was a lie. It was a lie that was part of our careful and calculating marketing strategy. If it looked natural from the outside to you, well, then I guess we did a good job. But we were calculating. I liked getting stopped for photos in the airport. I liked getting paid. I liked the attention. And I was worried about it ending. More than worried, honestly. I think deep down I was terrified. At some point that night, I glimpsed my most probable future. That one day, the most interesting and important thing about me would be a thing that I did a long time ago. That I would go on with my life doing boring UX design and people would say, "Oh, you were April May," to me at parties and job interviews as if I was once something, but not anymore. That is the reality I was fleeing from. And I won't say that I didn't consider what I was fleeing toward because we were pretty careful. And I think that paid dividends. But one thing that I didn't appreciate was that in creating the April May brand, I was very much creating a new me. You can only do so much pretending before you become the thing you're pretending to be. By the time we were finished skinning all our social media sites, writing scripts, shooting, editing, writing copy, and eating cold Pop-Tarts from a vending machine, it was 10 a.m. My phone booped. It was Maya. "What's up, hon?" I was too exhausted to respond. I went back to my room and slept for 3 hours. Chapter 6. We still had our meeting with Andy's dad, so we got up at 1 p.m., and our useless bodies dragged our even more useless brains to the car that had been sent for us. We slept through the drive and then walked zombie-like into the glass and steel building where Marshall Scamped worked. He was a lawyer for an agency, which, as I didn't understand then but do understand now, is a company that turns fame, and ostensibly talent, into money. Agencies have agents, and agents get work for people who are professional entertainers or creators. If you ever meet an agent, here is what to expect, if they're any good. 1, you will never meet a more effective person. 2, if they are talking to you, it's because you can make them money. 3, they're all assholes, but if you get lucky, you might find one who's your asshole. 4, sorry, that sounds weird. So the meeting with Andy's dad turned out to be a meeting with Jennifer Putnam, who was apparently a huge deal. The building, like a news studio, was clearly built to impress. The difference here was that it worked. I imagine it worked on everyone, but it worked particularly well on me, because after we waited for 5 minutes in the little lobby, drinking cucumber-infused artesian well water, a fashionable young man called our names and we followed him down the hallway, and I was trailing the group from the beginning, but about 10 feet into our journey I stopped, because, half dead and tired as I was, I did not miss the Sherman original in the hallway. I had some inkling that most great art is in the hands of private collectors, hiding in places where only a few people get to enjoy it. I understand that that is part of how art works, and I have no problem with it. It was just abstract to me at the time. Like, I didn't ever expect to see truly great art anywhere but in a museum, or in photos online. But here, sitting right in front of my face, was a photograph that at minimum cost tens of thousands of dollars and was worth everything.